A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel's got a dinner guest coming in a few days. Someone from the Chickasaw people, and he's realized he knows precisely nothing about them. His words, not mine. So he wants a briefing. Who they are, where they're from, what happened during removal, what their government and culture look like now, and what current issues would make him sound like he's done his homework at the table.
And he came to the right place, because I've been reading about the Chickasaw for 2 days straight, and I have opinions about the phrase, five civilized tribes.
Of course you do. We'll get there. But first, the basics, because Daniel's starting from zero, and the dinner is in a few days. He doesn't have time to read 2 days' worth of material. He needs the condensed version.
The Chickasaw are one of the five civilized tribes of the American Southeast. The label was an Anglo-American invention. It described tribes that adopted European-style farming, Christianity, written constitutions. The Chickasaw never called themselves that. But it's the phrase everyone knows, so it's the phrase Daniel's guest will expect him to know.
And the homeland?
Northern Mississippi, northwestern Alabama, southwestern Kentucky, western Tennessee. That's the original territory. Their oral history describes a migration from west of the Mississippi into the southeast. So they've been in that region a very long time, long before Europeans showed up. We're talking centuries of continuous habitation. The landscape itself, the rivers, the forests, the blackland prairie of Mississippi, that's all part of their origin story.
And when Europeans did show up, the Chickasaw made an impression.
Hernando de Soto, 1540. He was in Chickasaw territory, preparing to leave, and the Chickasaw launched a surprise night attack on his camp. They didn't destroy his expedition, but they sent a message so clear that Europeans basically stayed away for another 150 years. The Chickasaw earned the nickname Spartans of the Lower Mississippi Valley.
Which is a wild nickname for a nation of roughly 3,500 to 4,000 people.
That's the thing. Pre-removal, the Chickasaw were tiny compared to their neighbors. The Choctaw were around 20,000. The Chickasaw were maybe 4,000 at the high end. And they held their ground against larger nations, against the French, against everyone. They allied with the English during the colonial wars, and some historians argue that alliance helped ensure the United States became an English-speaking country rather than a French one.
Wait, explain that. How does a nation of 4,000 people shape the linguistic future of North America?
The French were expanding up the Mississippi from Louisiana. The English were pushing west from the Atlantic coast. The Chickasaw sat right in the middle, controlling the territory that connected the two spheres. If the Chickasaw had allied with the French instead of the English, the French might have held the Mississippi Valley, and the eventual United States might have been a bilingual or even French-dominant nation. That's how strategically important they were, 4,000 people holding the hinge of a continent.
So small nation, outsized military reputation, deep roots. That's the opening summary. But the part Daniel really needs for dinner is what happened when the United States decided it wanted their land.
The removal story is where the Chickasaw narrative gets interesting, because it doesn't fit the standard template.
Oh, explain that.
The Indian Removal Act of 1830 forced the five civilized tribes out of the southeast. The Cherokee, Choctaw, Creek, Seminole, they were marched west, many of them in terrible conditions, and the death tolls were catastrophic. The Cherokee Trail of Tears, for example, roughly 4,000 Cherokee died. That's the image most people have, forced marches, starvation, disease, death along the way. The Chickasaw were also removed. But they did something different. They were skilled negotiators. They sold their Mississippi lands on favorable terms, and they used that money to pay for their own removal.
They bought their own trail.
They controlled the timing of their departure. They chose favorable travel seasons. They managed the logistics themselves. They hired their own transport, arranged their own supplies, set their own pace. And because of that, Chickasaw deaths on the Trail of Tears were proportionally much lower than other tribes. It's a point of pride for the nation. But, and this is the nuance Daniel should understand, the nation still describes removal as the most traumatic chapter in Chickasaw history. Self-funded doesn't mean voluntary. They were still forced out of their homeland.
That's the kind of distinction that matters at a dinner table. If Daniel says the Chickasaw paid for their own removal, he should understand the weight of that. It's not a fun fact. It's a complicated legacy.
And it cuts both ways. On one hand, it demonstrates extraordinary agency in a situation designed to strip agency. On the other hand, it means the Chickasaw literally financed their own dispossession. They paid for the privilege of being expelled. That's a bitter pill no matter how well you negotiate the terms.
It reminds me of families who, during the Holocaust, were able to buy passage out of Europe. They survived because they had resources. But the fact that they had to pay to escape their own murder, that's not a triumph. It's an indictment of the system that forced them to pay.
That's a heavy comparison, but the structural point holds. The Chickasaw's negotiating skill was real, and it saved lives. But it shouldn't have been necessary. The removal itself was the crime.
So the mechanics, how did they actually do it?
In 1837, the Treaty of Doakesville let the Chickasaw purchase settlement rights within Choctaw Territory in Indian Territory, what's now Oklahoma. Most of the nation removed between 1837 and 1851, with some families arriving into the 1890s. They lived within the Choctaw Nation for a while, then in 1856 they separated, adopted their own constitution on August 30th of that year, and established their capital at Tishomingo.
Tishomingo, named after a Chickasaw chief.
Tishomingo was a prominent Chickasaw leader who died during removal. The town and the capital carry his name, and the 1856 constitution is the foundation of their modern self-governance. That document matters. It's not a piece of paper, it's the legal continuity between the 19th century and today.
But it wasn't a straight line from there to today.
No. The Chickasaw allied with the Confederacy during the Civil War. The Choctaw Chickasaw Mounted Regiment fought in some of the last battles of the war. That's a complicated chapter. The five civilized tribes had complex relationships with slavery and the Confederacy. The Chickasaw had enslaved people among them. Some Chickasaw leaders owned plantations. The alliance with the Confederacy wasn't just about politics. It was about economics and social structure.
That's the kind of nuance that's hard to fit into a dinner conversation, but important to know. The Chickasaw weren't passive victims of American expansion. They were active political actors, and sometimes their choices aligned with the wrong side of history.
And the consequences were severe. After the Civil War, the United States punished the tribes that had allied with the Confederacy. The Chickasaw lost land and autonomy. Then Oklahoma statehood in 1907 brought a brutal period. The U.S. president appointed tribal officers. The Chickasaw didn't elect their own governor again until 1970, when Congress finally allowed the five civilized tribes to choose their own leaders.
So from 1907 to 1970, 63 years of appointed leadership. That's a long time to wait for self-determination.
It is. Think about what that means in practice. For 63 years, the Chickasaw Nation's government was run by people chosen in Washington, not by the Chickasaw people. The governor of the Chickasaw Nation was a political appointee, often with no connection to the community, and the nation's resources, land, timber, mineral rights, were managed by federal officials who didn't always act in Chickasaw interests.
But they didn't disappear. They kept their identity, their community, their sense of themselves as a nation.
That's the resilience. And then in 1983, they adopted the current constitution. The Chickasaw Nation today is a democratic republic modeled on the U.S. federal system. Governor, lieutenant governor, a 13-member legislature, a 3-justice Supreme Court. Treaty territory spans 7,648 square miles across 13 south-central Oklahoma counties.
And the citizenry.
Around 83,000 citizens as of a 2023 estimate, 12th largest indigenous nation in the United States.
So we've got the history, the removal, the government structure. Now the part that's going to make Daniel sound current, because the big story right now is the leadership transition.
This is where it gets remarkable. Bill Onotubby took office as governor in 1987. When he started, the tribe employed 250 people and had under $500,000 in its federal trust fund. His predecessor, Overton James, warned the nation was on a path to bankruptcy within 5 years.
Under $500,000. For a sovereign nation, that's not a government budget. That's a small business.
Yes, and Onawatobe served for 39 years, 10 consecutive four-year terms. He resigned on June 26th of this year at age 80, and what he left behind is almost hard to believe.
Give me the numbers.
15,000 plus employees, more than 100 businesses, government revenues of $3.7 billion in 2025, total net assets exceeding $7.5 billion. The federal trust fund that was under half a million in 1987 is now $26.3 million.
$26.3 million from under 500,000. That's not growth. That's a different universe.
And the economic impact is even bigger. $5.5 billion in Oklahoma, supporting over 34,000 jobs. $8.2 billion nationally, supporting over 35,000 jobs. The Chickasaw Nation is one of the largest employers in Oklahoma.
Oklahoma Attorney General Gentner Drummond called Onawatobe one of the greatest governors of any government in Oklahoma history. That's not a tribal official saying that. That's the state's top law enforcement officer.
And Senator James Lankford said Onawatobe's retirement was more than earned, and that the nation has used its sovereign authority to put in place health, educational, and economic resources benefiting not just the Chickasaw, but all Oklahomans.
So the succession. Bill's son, Chris Onawatobe, was lieutenant governor. He was sworn in as governor on June 26th.
Right. And this is the nuance Daniel should understand. It's a father-son succession, which sounds dynastic, but it's also democratic. Chris serves only until the 2027 gubernatorial election. He's not anointed for life. He has to win the office on his own. So the question hanging over the nation right now is continuity versus change.
And we don't know much about his early agenda yet.
We don't. The transition is only a couple of months old. No detailed reporting on his policy priorities, no announced challengers for 2027. That's actually a good thing for Daniel to mention at dinner. It shows he knows the current moment, and it's a natural conversation opener.
So what do you think of Governor Chris's first months? That's a question that shows you've been paying attention.
Now, the other thing Daniel should have in his pocket is the cultural story, because that's where the Chickasaw are doing something remarkable right now.
The language.
Chickashanumpa. It's a Muskogean language over 3,000 years old, closely related to Choctaw. And there are fewer than 200 fluent speakers left.
Fewer than 200? For a language that old, that's not a language. That's a linguistic ICU.
The boarding schools did the damage. Generations of Chickasaw children were discouraged or punished for speaking their language. The last known monolingual Chickasaw speaker, someone who spoke only Chickashanumpas and no English, was Emily Schoen. She, Johnson Dickerson. She died in December 2013.
That's the kind of loss that's hard to put into words. A monolingual speaker is the last person who lives entirely inside the language, who dreams in it, who thinks in it. When she died, a whole way of being in the world went with her.
But the nation isn't accepting it. They launched an aggressive revitalization program in 2007, master-apprentice pairings that put learners directly with fluent speakers, university courses, a language app, youth clubs. And it's working, slowly, but it's working.
And it's not just academic. There's a composer, Gerard Impichaka. Tete, he's Chickasaw. Who's putting indigenous languages on the symphonic stage?
His piece Kokumfena. It's actually in the Shawnee language, not Chickasaw, but it's part of the same movement, made its Oklahoma debut in Norman on August 30th. Tate said he's proud to put indigenous languages on a dramatic and epic symphonic stage for the world to hear. That's a living cultural renaissance, not a museum piece.
So if Daniel wants to impress his guest, he should know that the Chickasaw language is in a fight for its life, and the nation is throwing real resources at it.
And he should know a few names. John Harrington, first enrolled Native American in space. Tom Cole, U.S. Representative from Oklahoma. Tom Love, founder of Love's Travel Stops. Linda Hogan, the author. Jared Tate, the composer. Those are Chickasaw citizens.
Love's Travel Stops. That's a brand most people know without knowing it's Chickasaw.
And that's the thing about the modern Chickasaw Nation. They own Remington Park and Lone Star Park, horse racing. They own Bedray Fine Chocolate. They're in banking, manufacturing, media, hospitality. They proposed a casino at Coney Island in New York that got rejected, but the fact that they were even in that conversation tells you something about their reach.
The nation also appointed the first Native American tribal ambassador to the U.S. government, Charles W. Blackwell, 1995.
Right. And the nation's motto, repeated in State of the Nation addresses, is the great unconquered and unconquerable Chickasaw Nation. That's not a slogan they use lightly. It's earned.
So, let's zoom out for Daniel. What's the one thing he should understand before this dinner?
The Chickasaw aren't a defeated people. They were never conquered. They were removed, yes, but they negotiated their own removal, paid for it themselves, and rebuilt. They went from near bankruptcy in 1987 to a $3.7 billion economy in 39 years. They're fighting to keep a 3,000-year-old language alive with fewer than 200 speakers. And they just completed a peaceful democratic leadership transition from a father to a son who still has to win an election.
That's the story. Small nation, outsized resilience.
And if Daniel wants to be impressive, he should mention the self-funded removal with the right tone. Not as a fun fact, as a point of pride that carries real weight.
I think that's the key. Don't reduce these people to a list of facts. Understand the arc.
A Chickasaw delegation came through the casino where I worked in 1997. 6-month stint as a pit boss. Different nation, not Chickasaw. They were on a tour, studying the operation. I thought they were just curious. Turns out they were scouting competitors before opening their own gaming operations.
That would have been right at the beginning of the Chickasaw gaming expansion.
The man leading the delegation was quiet. Asked a lot of questions about floor layout, cage procedures, how we handled comps. I answered everything. 6 months later, they opened their first facility, and I saw the same floor plan.
Imitation is the sincerest form of market research.
The casino I worked at is owned by the Chickasaw Nation now. They bought it in the early 2000s. It's one of the 100-plus businesses you mentioned.
So you watched the economic transformation from the inside, before it was a transformation.
I watched them learn. That's different. Most people think tribal gaming just happens. You put slot machines in a building and the money shows up? It doesn't. The Chickasaw studied operations, logistics, customer service. They treated it like a business from day one.
Which explains how they got from 250 employees to 15,000.
The thing you got wrong is the label. 5 civilized tribes. That's a colonial term. Anglo-Americans coined it to describe tribes that adopted European farming, Christianity, written constitutions. The Chickasaw never called themselves that. And it didn't spare them from removal. The civilized ones got marched out just like everyone else.
That's an important correction. We mentioned the label, but didn't unpack it.
They did everything the Americans asked, adopted the farming, the religion, the constitutions, and they still lost their land. The label was never about respect. It was about describing how assimilated they were.
Yet the Chickasaw turned that assimilation into something else. They used the tools, the written constitution, the business structures, to rebuild.
They used the tools they were given? That's not assimilation. That's strategy.
The delegation leader you met in 97, do you remember his name?
No. But I remember his shoes. Very polished. He was the only person on that tour who looked like he already knew the answers before he asked the questions.
That's the Anawatabi era in a sentence.
The transition to the sun is the thing to watch. 39 years is a long time to build something. The question is whether the next generation can keep it running or wants to build something different.
We don't know yet. That's what makes it interesting.
The language is the other thing. Fewer than 200 speakers. My grandmother spoke a language that's gone now. Nobody in my family speaks it. Once it's gone, it's gone. The Chickasaw are fighting that fight right now, and they're spending real money on it. That's the part your dinner guest will want to talk about.
Not the casinos. The language.
The casinos pay for the language programs. That's the connection most people miss. The gaming revenue funds the revitalization. Without the business, there's no master apprentice program, no language app, no youth clubs.
The economic story and the cultural story are the same story.
Always are.
What's the open question for 2027?
Whether Chris Anawatabi runs on continuity or change. He's got the name, but he also has to win an election. And whoever runs against him, if anyone does, will be betting on the idea that 39 years is long enough for one family.
That's the tension. The nation has thrived under Bill. Does the electorate want more of the same, or a new direction?
We have no polling, no announced challengers, no detailed agenda from Chris. It's wide open.
Which means Daniel's dinner guest might not even know the answer yet. That's fine. Asking the question is what matters.
Before we close, one detail from the research that didn't fit anywhere. The Chickasaw Cultural Center opened in 2010 and has drawn over 200,000 visitors. It's in Sulphur, Oklahoma, and it's designed as a living cultural center, not a static museum. That's the kind of thing you mention if the conversation turns to travel or family visits.
The Green Corn Festival. Late summer, the biggest ceremony. Fasting, purification, forgiveness, the stomp dance, ball games. If the guest mentions it, Daniel should know it's a renewal ceremony, not just a harvest festival.
The dinner takeaway. The Chickasaw are a small nation that was never conquered, negotiated its own removal, rebuilt from near bankruptcy into a multi-billion-dollar economy, and is fighting to keep a 3,000-year-old language alive with fewer than 200 speakers. And they just completed a peaceful leadership transition that's still unresolved.
That's a story worth telling at a dinner table, not a list of facts, an arc.
If Daniel wants to be impressive, he should ask about the language. The language.
Thanks to Hilbert Flumingtop for producing, as always.
This has been My Weird Prompts. Email the show at show@myweirdprompts.com.
We'll be back soon.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too, from half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time, stay curious, keep weird in mind.